Hey there, Ham Nation is next, and we're going to touch on a very, very important subject, and that is tower safety. Pretty high-profile Ham just became a silent key because he did not use the right equipment, and he fell off his tower. That's two since October. High-profile Hams. Don't take chances on towers. Listen to what we're going to tell you. We have a lot of other great stuff, too, tonight, but we cannot stress enough tower safety. And that's first and foremost next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. By LDG Electronics. LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art automatic antenna tuners and related products for every amateur need. Visit ldgelectronics.com to learn more. And by Peak PTT. Peak PTT, the leading provider of push-to-talk systems for business communications. For instant, always-on, nationwide communications, visit peakptt.com and use promo code TWIT for 15% off.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 394, recorded March 20th, 2019. Tower safety is essential.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and we're on Ham Nation. You're watching a great show on the TWiT Network about amateur radio. We have some very important people here, and we have some very serious things to talk about. Most of our stuff is serious, but tonight it's kind of a life or death thing. And so wake up and listen. This is very important. And let's see halls around us. We can go out to California. Let's talk to Gordo. How you doing, Mr. Gordon? All right?
We're doing great. We're getting ready for a busy weekend, and it's going to be a busy weekend here in Southern California for the Desert Radio Amateur Transmitting Society. They call themselves Desert Rats. This Saturday, they're forming up in La Quinta, near Palm Springs, to have their big ham radio get-together. And also, Bob, you know about this, Dave DeFabo, W9BWP, Milwaukee Radio Amateurs Club. The Milwaukee Area AR Society says that Saturday they're celebrating 100 years, and they're getting together at the VFW right across the street from the big ham store there on Good Hope Road in Milwaukee. So we wish everyone a very great Saturday for ham festing.
Yeah. That's great. It's a great club, too. You and I both have times with them. They're really something special. George, how are you doing? You got your soldering iron ready? We're going to do something in a while. You and Randy, you got something cooked up, right?
Yeah, Randy found this very unusual antenna just sort of stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And he hooked up to it and did some testing, made some contacts with it. So we're going to learn a little bit about that a little bit later in the show.
Right. That's great. I'm going to have a very short update on the Amico project. I've gotten so many emails about this little guy. But I have a little update on it. It won't be a long schedule. We've got so much to do tonight. I told you in the beginning that we have something serious to talk about. And I wanted to bring our friend Tim Duffy in and talk about this. It looks like we have lost another amateur. Tim Duffy, how are you doing?
Doing good, Bob. Thanks very much for asking me to be on the show this evening. It's certainly a topic that is near and dear to both of our hearts and all of the Ham Nation listeners. Really, you know, we need to focus on this and do something about the tower safety and antenna safety, so that we don't lose another radio amateur to a fatality here this year.
Well, I couldn't believe it when I read it that Clovis, he did this same thing that, that happened to our friend Paul. It's just awful. And I know that you knew Clovis very well. He was a very strong DX operator. Tell us a little bit about some of his accomplishments, if you can, Tim.
Yeah. You know, Bob, Clovis, and his call sign is PV8ADI from Brazil, Papa Victor 8 Alpha Delta India. And Clovis was a ham's ham. And when I talk about a ham's ham, that is somebody that has such a deep love for amateur radio and for wireless and radio in his heart. He had been a ham for over 60 years. And this was, you know, he's 80 years old here working on his tower. And, you know, this is what he loved. He loved working on his antennas, working on his towers. He built all of his towers, all of his antennas, almost by himself. You know, so he was indestructible. Even at the age of 80, he felt indestructible. And Clovis, Bob, was on the air every day. He was making QSOs. He loved CW. He was on 40 meters, on 20 meters, on 80 meters. And we would work him in the contest. I would work him outside of the contest. He just loved ham radio. And he loved any ham that wanted to get on the air and make QSOs. Look at some of these antennas that he had put together. And he was a beacon from Brazil, a real stalwart. But, you know, Bob, like so many of us, he got stuck in his ways. He had used for many years a chair to lift him up onto the tower into position so that he could work on his towers and on his antennas. And he was using rope, and he was using non-approved equipment to actually pull him up into position because, you know, even though he's in great shape for being 80 years old, he just couldn't climb the towers like he used to back in the day. So, and that failed here less than a week ago. Over the weekend, it failed. And so PV8ADI became a silent key, much the same way that Reverend Paul Bittner, W0AIH, did on October 31st. And Paul was 84 years old. He was quite proud of how he had maintained all of his antennas by himself. And again, it was a pulley and a rope and pulling up, you know, so that he didn't have to climb the towers. And that is very, very, very unsafe. And so, you know, our hope, Bob, is here tonight that, you know, every listener goes to their club meetings and said, you know, talks about the fact that PV8ADI, W0AIH made some poor decisions in how they were going to maintain their antennas. And so that's the hope, that the word gets out and through the clubs and through club meetings that you're not going and borrowing a belt and it's amateur hour. You know, it's tower maintenance, antenna maintenance up on a tower is just not the time to be an amateur. It's better to have a seasoned professional do the work for you, especially as we get on in years. And, you know, here at K3LR, we've got 13 towers. I'm very well aware that I'm past my prime of climbing. And so it's much better to have the professionals do it. That's what they, when you have a plumbing problem that's really serious, you call a plumber. You know, when you have somebody that you have a problem with your heating or air conditioning, you call a pro. You got to do that when it comes to your tower issues. Every year on field day, guys take chances. And you have to ask what your life is worth. And it's priceless. So, and it's really important that if you see something that is unsafe, you say something and say, stop. Don't do it. Because we just can't have this, Bob. We can't have guys going up and doing tower work in an unsafe manner. It just doesn't, it's not the amateur way. You know, enough with these silent keys. We have to make sure that we're taking care of our own. And Bob, you know, at Contest University this year, as we do every year, we have a tower safety class, and it's taught by a professional. Tim Jellison, W3YQ, graciously comes down. He is certified. He is a tower professional. He's got years of professional experience. Tim and I have been friends for 45 years. He has worked in the tower industry. He knows the right way to do things. And so if you have any questions, you can always email Tim, or you can come to Contest University, and he'll help you. He'll answer all your questions, point you to great information on the internet. And that's the real secret, you know, is to make sure that you don't take chances that end up in a silent key. W0AIH, PV8ADI, and others, unfortunately, have become silent keys because of tower accidents that can be prevented. And that's what we want to do, is prevent the next one. We don't want to see this happen again, Bob.
Absolutely. I'm just sitting here thinking that, you know, last year at Dayton and the Contest University, who would have thought that you and I would, in a short time, be here talking about two deaths of two giant operators? It's really hard to imagine. And they did it in a like manner. So don't ever think that you are indestructible and you can just go climbing up a tower. And you have to know how to do it. That's the whole deal. And there are people that can help you. So you need to, if you don't know of any, contact myself, contact Tim, even Valerie's Jerry. That's their business. They not only do amateur radio towers, they're doing 1,000-foot broadcast towers. We need to learn from those guys. But the learning for me is picking up a telephone and saying hello. But please take this to heart. Don't just let this go by. We're not going to let it go by because Tim has graciously accepted. We're going to come on every once in a while here and beat this into all of us, because this is a serious thing, and I can't believe so much has happened all of a sudden. And you look at the, Victor, if you have that first picture of Clovis in that red tower, check out the towers that he built. Now, he built, look at that. This is not a Rhone 25G. Have you been there to see that particular tower when it got finished, Tim?
I've been to Brazil, but I have not been to Clovis's QTH, even though we were good friends. I've not been there. But you can see just from this photo, Bob, the meticulous attention to detail. But even though he is on a ladder here, Bob, what is missing in this photo, and unfortunately, I think we saw this several times, Clovis doesn't have a safety belt on or a fall arrest harness. So there's a safety belt and a fall arrest harness that are part of every climber's gear in this case. Anytime you're over the height of 3 feet above the ground, you have to have a fall arrest harness and a safety belt. So 2 points of hooking up. So Clovis is here on a ladder, and he's got himself looped through with his arms, but he's certainly not in a safe condition. You know, if something would happen here and he would fall, there's nothing here to save his life. So we need to learn from Clovis. I mean, Clovis was a tremendous amateur radio operator. At 80 years old, he felt indestructible. All of us get to a point where we shouldn't be climbing, even though we think we can. But even some of our newer, inexperienced hams, it's really important that we know our limitations. Here you see that he's got this small blue rope harness around his waist as a safety belt, but there's no fall arrest here. And it's really important. We've learned a lot since cellular telephone has come on the scene since 1984 in how we do tower work with fall arrest systems as well as safety belts. And as Bob pointed out, if you have a tower job and you need help, all you have to do is email either Bob or myself at K3LR, K3LR.com, and I will point you towards a tower professional that understands amateur radio in your area, and we will get you the help you need. If you need a rotor replaced, if you need an antenna installed, whatever it takes, don't do something you shouldn't do. So let's stay safe. Let's stay alive.
My good friend, Ollie, years ago, he had a crank-up top. You know, it was one of the five, so it was a nice big... And he had a seat belt, but his arm hung at the top rung that he was on doing something and died. And it went crazy. I don't, but the tower, the steel cable broke, and that tower came down, cut his arm off. It was just, what can we do?
You're absolutely right. Crank up towers are another set of safety issues. Certainly, if the tower is cranked up in any sort of manner, you should not be on the tower. You should be on a man lift doing any service. You should not be on a crank up tower when it's cranked up in any sort of position. That is a very big safety hazard. And if you're not sure, ask one of us or ask a senior member in your club. But don't take chances. That's the big thing. Don't take chances, because we want you here. We want you on the air. We want you with your families. And losing your life for an amateur radio project is it's just not worth it. So don't take the chances. Don't be a hero. And, you know, we all have to learn from Clovis and from Paul Bittner. And let's make a commitment to help each other. And if we see something that's bad, we say something and stop.
All right. I want to give all you guys some homework. We all belong to clubs, and you need programming. Yes, Gordon, myself, George, we all go out. I've done eight clubs in the last 8 or 9 days. It's been fun. Every day, every night, I'm doing a club. Let's make a club program with tower safety. And the next time you see Tim and I together here in a week or so, let's bring on one of those harnesses that you're talking about, Tim, because some of the guys might not even know what we're talking about. These safety harnesses are really something. So let's do that. We'll bring our harnesses on and show them what we got. What you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got mine here. I actually do two climbs a year for tower inspections here at K3LR, but I'll have my safety harness here. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the exciting youth project with Team Exuberance next week. So you're on, yeah. Bob.
Next week's a goodie for you. That's great. All right. Thanks for being here. You did this in real quick, and it's so vital to let everybody know.
It sounds
Tim,
good, Bob.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Tim, we'd love to see the harnesses and talk about pricing, the hard hat, chin strap that's got to go with a hard hat, the kind of shoes. I think all of our Ham Nation viewers would very much like to see what it takes to be safe on a tower.
Yeah, you know, Gordon, you know that you and I both have learned from other Elmers. And I had some great tower Elmers over the years. I've also been to several tower safety schools. And so it's time for us to share that knowledge with the Ham Nation audience. And let's go out and save some lives here. Let's make sure that we don't make these mistakes again.
Okay, very good. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we'll count on maybe next week or week ever, whichever is great for you, to show off the latest techniques in not only picking the right harness, but getting the harness properly attached to your body along with that bungee safety line as well.
Sounds great, Gordo. Thanks for having me on this evening. And if anybody has any tower safety questions or tower questions or antenna questions that I can help with, I'm always available at K3LR at K3LR.com. 73, Gordo, 73, Ham Nation.
All right. Thanks so much, Tim. And let's go over to George. And George, maybe you can talk about a little bit of tower work that your team does. George?
Well, Gordo, I hire out all my tower work. Well, I have for a number of years. I let professionals do it. You know, it's very unsettling to be on the ground and there's somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing up on the tower. I've been there. I've done that. I've seen wrenches and things falling off the tower. Fortunately, I haven't witnessed someone falling off, but I've seen a lot of drop tools and things, and you just can't do that. By the way, the safety word is headache. If you're standing up under the tower and somebody hollers headache, you better have your hard hat on and you better run, because that means they've just dropped something. But it's not worth the risk. If you don't know exactly what you're doing, have the proper gear and some training, don't do it. You know, find someone else who's got the experience and can help you with that. Sometimes it might mean spending a few dollars, but, you know, that's better than not being around to spend the dollars. It's dangerous work, and it can be done safely with the right training, and provided you're in a proper physical condition for it. But, you know, I'd say most of us hams, you know, we're getting older and probably should have someone else doing that for us.
All right. Well, I sure agree. So, Tim, you're familiar with that word, not heads up, but headache.
Yeah, the headache is a, you know, that's a last resort, because when we're doing tower work here at K3LR, there is nobody without a hard hat on. Absolutely everybody that is around the work area has a hard hat on. And even with that hard hat, Gordo, they're not within the range of a direct fall. You know, the stuff is going to fall straight down. And George is right. You know, whether it's a nut or a wrench, I mean, even a nut that drops from 200 feet is a bad, bad problem. So bottom line is nobody is allowed around the base of the tower, and everybody has a hard hat on. Everybody is trained in the safety procedures, and as George knows, the man on the tower is in charge. He is the crew leader. He calls the shots, and he's the guy in charge. So it's very important. I don't care if we're up at 30 feet putting up a tri-bander or at 20 feet hooking up a dipole. You know, you see guys that say, well, I'm just going up 20 feet. It's not a big deal. It is a big deal. You fall from 20 feet and you're going to, you know, most likely you're going to have a significant trouble. If not, you're dead. And it's just not worth it. You know, hanging up an 80 meter dipole at 20 feet. I mean, guys fall from gutter cleaning and have, you know, real trouble. It's not worth it. So it's much better to do it the right way, get a professional's help, and, you know, let's live to get on the air and have fun. it's really that simple. I think, Gordo, but we got to keep, you know, singing the same song over and over and over. It's like Bob said, every month or so, we got to talk about this, because it's got to get out to the clubs. It's important that everybody talks about W0AIH and PV8ADI, and what happened to these guys should not happen again.
Very good. I sure agree. Well, speaking of dipoles, Victor, if you're ready, I happen to have some wire here, and this is the wire that I safely used about 5 days ago, getting a signal on the air on 20 meters and working more stations on the East Coast than I could shake a stick at. So, Victor, let's go ahead and look at that simple, old, inexpensive dipole antenna. Victor? You can buy a commercial dipole, but what the heck? You should make your own. The dipole antenna is a half a wavelength long, and each side is 1/4 wavelength. Now, safe way to do it is if you have a tree, get someone else to go up the tree and maybe put a pulley on it. Or if you've got a mast, and of course, anytime you're working on anything that's going up, look around and make sure that there's no exposed high tension lines or even household 220-440 lines in the area that the antenna could fall on. Stay away. The dipole, each side is 1/4 wavelength. And except for the 40-meter dipole, it works just on that band. For 40 meters, you can sometimes get the dipole also to work on 15 meters, especially if you have a built-in antenna tuner. Now, out at our Quartz Fest, we usually put up our dipole. It goes up on a telescopic mast that you see on the back of our comm van. And, of course, yeah, we got to fly the pig just to make sure everybody knows where to come to look at the dipole. And that dipole did just as well at 100 watts as some of the other antennas that were horribly a lot more expensive and physically larger. But the dipole cut the frequency will really make things happen. Now, as you can see, there's Patrick, and he's got his hard hat on. Most important, safety glasses. In fact, in our classes, anytime we're working with antennas, I always make sure that everybody has plastic lenses or plastic safety glasses, because your eyes can be penetrated easily by anything falling, or you can, oops, almost walked into that one. You realize what it's like. So anytime you're doing any kind of antenna work, have the proper climbing equipment or the safety equipment, even if you're standing right on the deck or, in this case, on the roof. Now, we found that some of the dipole antennas, they have a one-to-one ballon. The ballon does not like to be hugging that metal pole. In fact, when the SWR was a little higher, we had to do some adjustments on the one-to-one feed system. And once we did that, the SWR dropped right down to a perfect one-to-one. But it was elevated as that ballon was hugging the metal pole. I always like to do three or four wraps of the coax cable feed line to ensure that it acts much like an RF choke. So if we don't have anything coming back down to bite us on the transceiver. Yep, the choke sometimes weights down the feed point of the dipole, but I like to do a lot of experiments, and there was a little handmade choke, and the RF was absolutely quiet at the business end of the PL259 down at the radio. Now, you can use different techniques of doing the dipole, but you never, ever, ever want to leave your coax cable like this exposed, but rather get that coax seal. You can get that at Tim's Place or Reynoldsburg, Ohio. A lot of different places sell coax seal or come up with your own type of sealing. But make sure that you're not going to have moisture that will literally feed down the coax. For high frequency, and you know, the FCC and the American Radio Relay League, the big announcement this week was, should technician class operators gain some privileges for voice and data, not just CW data, but real live data like FT8 on the 75, 80-meter band, on the 40-meter band, and the 15-meter band to go along with their HF 10-meter privileges. So we may find It's probably not going to happen for at least 2 years, because that's when the next technician class question pool comes time for revision to incorporate the new rules. But when it does come, a lot of techs think that they still have to run the big coax cable, the LMR400 or RG8, but they can get by with smaller coax as the high frequency band is not near as demanding for low loss coax. So if you got the big old coax, that's fine. But if you have the smaller RG8X, that's okay. RG58, no, let's leave that back to the CB days. So RG8X is good. And when you're looking for coax, get together with Tim and his team and let them describe the percentage of shield. Look at that right-hand coax. That is terrible stuff. That's about 75% shield. That's going to radiate a ton of signal out of the coax. We call it in tunnels leaky coax on purpose. This is going to leak out a lot of your signals, even down on HF. On VHF and UHF, it's a killer. The one in the center is another good example of not enough braid to keep the good stuff in. The very left-hand one, I got that from DX Engineering, and that has not only a silver-tinned shield, but also an aluminum that goes around that, covered by the non-contaminating jacket, the stuff in black. So that's good stuff on the left. Go with good coax. Now, I was telling you, I was playing around with this like number 18 wire. And my big question was, would the 18 or almost 20 gauge wire do as well as like 14 gauge? Well, this is 14 gauge wire here on the left and the right. Each side is 16 and a half feet for the 20 meter band the other day. And when I substituted this black wire I have right here in the radio room, there was almost no difference. In fact, there was not a dramatic difference at the station that was coming in. One was ground wave, so conditions would remain the same. The other was sky wave, but he was still coming in 40 over 9, and he was down in Florida. So you can make up your own dipole antenna quite nicely. Now, helping you make up that dipole antenna is remember the length. For 10 meters, each side is about 8 feet long. For 15 meters, each side is 11 feet long. For 20 meters, each side is 16 and a half feet long. 40 meters, each side is 32 feet long. And 75 meters, each side is about 64 feet long. And for those of you that have the real estate down on 160 meters, each side is 128 feet long. So for the 20 meter band, for those that have general, advanced, and extra, each side is only 16 and a half feet long. Gosh, on 10 meters, for those of you that are technician class operators, each side is a measly 8 feet long. And what I recommend is run your, as you can see here, this is zip cord that I've pulled apart. Run your bare ends down to an insulator and then double it back on itself. And this is why. If you find that you made it a little too short, well, you could redo things. But here's my way of making it look longer, and that is add a little bit of inductance by just burying the wire and letting it dangle down. Actually, that's more capacitance. And you're going to find that about 1 to 1.5 inches is going to give you about 100 kilohertz. In this case, going lower in frequency. Remember, on your dipole wires, longer will go lower. Usually about 1 inch on a unloaded dipole will give you about 100 kilohertz of excursion down the band. And so for our 20 meter dipole the other day, wow, look at that, a perfect 1-to-1 feed impedance, just under 50 ohms. It was a little higher when I had it as a flat top, but as soon as I brought down each end of that dipole, immediately the feed point impedance got real close to 50 ohms that we see there. So that antenna analyzer, very important. And if the band is open, holy smoly, you're going to be talking dipoles all over the country. And if the band really gets open, here we come, Solar Cycle 25, it's going to talk worldwide as well. Well, next week, we'll talk about a coaxial dipole. And this was invented by an operator at MIT. And W8 Tango Victor said ham radio operators could use it. But the hams go, it's not going to work. Well, next week, we're going to show you that this type of an antenna as a dipole is very similar to the lengths I just gave you, but 1/8 wavelength is much like a balun to the coax, where the center conductor of the coax goes to the braid on one side of a coaxial cable dipole, and the braid on the feed line goes to the braid on the other side. And after about 1/8 of a wavelength, they get shorted, and that is going to act as a perfect balun. And you're going to find that where you did have maybe 150 kilohertz on 40 meters, you're now able to slide up and down throughout the entire band. So your mission for this week is to look up coaxial dipole, and it is sometimes called the bazooka antenna or double bazooka, but the coaxial dipole, also called a capacitive dipole, whatever you want to call it, start looking it up in the ARRL antenna book and see that that little piece of RG58U that's about 16 feet long and you got a couple of sections of it. Wow, you could really do some nice things on the 20-meter band with that. But remember, once you do this particular type of dipole, much like a regular dipole, it is going to be band-specific. Very much so with a capacitive coaxial dipole, very band-specific. It will not work on other bands, which for field day is wonderful because you don't want interference coming in from other band stations, and this coaxial cable dipole is one way around that. So we'll talk more about that next week. So George, I'm going to hand it back to you, and then we'll see if Don and Dr. T is there for their report. For right now, George, back to you. Gordo, WB6 and away.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. ICOM's newest SDR transceiver, the IC9700, is coming soon. This new radio is bringing direct sampling to the UHF-VHF weak signal world. The IC9700 all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features, such as dedicated amateur satellite operation, color touchscreen, built-in D-Star capability, RF direct sampling on 2 meters and 70 centimeter bands, dual independent receivers capable of full duplex operation as well as dual watch, 100 watts maximum output power on 2 meters, 75 watts max on 70 centimeters, and 10 watts max on 1.2 gigahertz. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Attention all hams!
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fest they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at icomamerica.com/hams.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and sign up. You could win the weekly drawing for swag like T-shirts and hats. And you'll automatically be entered into the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For March, that new radio is the ID51A+2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable. It's got built-in GPS, D-Star, and FM repeater search function, extended D-Star coverage like DV fast data mode, terminal mode, access point mode, and there's a free Android application available, and a lot more. Great radio, and it could be yours for free if your name is drawn when you enter at icomamerica.com/hamnation. And you can enter after each episode. So do so. Get your chances up to win. Thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Ham Nation. We really appreciate it. And Gordo talking about the dipoles there. Yeah, those are probably the most popular antennas. And that coaxial dipole, I know another ham here on the show who really favors those. And perhaps Bob will get in on some of that action as well. Great antennas. And, yeah, maybe you can't work all the bands, but the band that you can work all of it. So great antenna choice there. Well, now it's time to get the news and see what's going on in the wide, wide world of amateur radio. So here's Donnie.
Thank you, sir. Good to be back on the program tonight. Hello to our WTWW listeners at 508, 5, and 15.810. Of course, if you've got amateur radio-related news that you'd like to share with the WTWW listeners, the email address is very simple, email at WTWW.us. They especially like signal reports. And today's the first day of spring, so let's just spring right on into the news, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2159, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 20th, 2019. Our top story this week is the Colorado bomb cyclone that struck the American West. Newsline anchor Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
The Northern Colorado DMR Group regularly uses Brandmeister Talk Group 31083 whenever hazardous weather threatens the region. But the Ham's severe weather net was put to the ultimate test on the 13th of March when a bomb cyclone blizzard struck. According to Matt, K0LWC, nearly 50 amateurs checked in between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Mountain Time from QTHs throughout Colorado as well as Wyoming, Nebraska, and Kansas. They passed on road conditions and closures, power outages, and weather conditions. The net also submitted weather reports to the National Weather Service in Boulder and gave Colorado State Patrol reports of stranded motorists. Matt said the talk group was carried constantly on a number of northern repeaters in the state as well as in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He told Newsline that the Colorado Digital Multi-Protocol Bridge allowed users on Yaesu System Fusion and D-Star to also access the talk group even without a DMR radio.
Get ready for youngsters DXing from Curacao. The adventure isn't until summer, but if you're interested and qualified, you need to apply now.
The 2019 Dave Coulter Memorial Youth DX Adventure has begun accepting applications from youngsters who will be between the ages of 12 and 17 at the time the trip takes place between July 14th and 19th. According to the website, there is room for three youngsters and parents. The station, PJ2T, will once again be hosted by Uli Thielka, DL80BQ. Last year's operation, which used the call sign PJ2Y, made almost 6,300 contacts. The trip is named in memory of Dave Coulter, KB8OCP, a noted contester, DXer, and youth advocate who became a silent key in 2013. The website notes that organizers are aware of the tense political situation in Venezuela, which is more than 40 miles south over the ocean from Curacao, and will be monitoring this situation. The trip, for now, is still on. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meechan, ZL2BHF.
Under a new American Radio Relay League volunteer monitoring program, hams are helping the FCC monitor for rule violations. Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, former FCC Special Counsel for Amateur Radio Enforcement, heads the new program.
Under a new American Radio Relay League volunteer monitor program, hams are helping the FCC monitor for rules violations. Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, former FCC Special Counsel for Amateur Radio Enforcement, heads the new program.
These volunteer monitors would be placed around the country or located around the country, of course, but with emphasis on geographic areas where there are no field offices or where there are field offices that are exceptionally burdened with their workload. On the ARRL website, You should see soon application forms for volunteer monitoring, and we encourage all of the OOs to apply. Now, the OO program has been a hallmark of the league, and I know in my term working in amateur enforcement, I relied significantly on the reports of OOs. Now, the new arrangement actually verifies the value of the longstanding OO program as it morphs into the volunteer program, because if it weren't for the hard work of the OOs, the FCC would never have made this offer. This new agreement and procedure should be a major force multiplier in making up for the fewer numbers of FCC field engineers working in enforcement.
For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
A reminder that the nominating period is now open for the Newsline WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award. Full details and the nominating form can be found on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. We'll present the award in August at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We're in the middle of some fast solar wind that brought us to storm levels just a couple days ago. And we're watching the sun very carefully because a filament might erupt as it gets sandwiched between two new growing sunspots. Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is getting very exciting. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see that dark coronal hole. That's been sending us some fast wind, and it actually bumped us up to storm levels just a couple days ago and brought us some aurora down to high latitudes. But that's not the big story. The big story are the two fast-growing sunspots in Earth view. One of them has been labeled 2735, and the other one might be labeled 2736 if it keeps growing. What's more is that that region might actually be a rogue sunspot showing influence from the new solar cycle. Now, what's even more than that is they're both sandwiching this filament, and we're watching this thing because it looks like it might actually erupt due to how unstable those sunspots are making that region. As we switch to our backside sun, you can see in Stereo's west limb, that far view, you can see how active those sunspots are. You can even see a shadow of that filament kind of sitting off the limb there. It shows you how close it is to erupting. And if this region does go, then it could easily launch an Earth-directed solar storm and bring us a chance for more aurora. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are still in the trailing edge of that fast solar wind from that coronal hole that has been rotating through the Earth's strike zone. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active conditions with up to about a 25% chance of a minor storm. At mid-latitudes, well, we're kind of sitting at unsettled conditions, and we have about a 25% chance of active conditions, but most likely we're not going to see aurora at mid-latitudes. What's more is things will continue to quiet down in through the weekend before we get another chance at some more fast wind. But if that filament erupts that we're watching, we might see something sooner. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we have two very fast-growing sunspots on the Earth-facing disk right now. One of them has already been labeled region 2735 by NOAA, and the second one, which could be labeled 2736 very soon, that one is showing an influence from the new solar cycle, so it could actually be a rogue sunspot. Now, these regions are not growing so fast as to cause any issue for radio blackouts with big solar flares. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders and even you GPS users on Earth's dayside, don't worry, we don't have any big risk of disruptions right now. But we are watching that, and this could change. The one nice thing is that these regions are boosting the solar flux, keeping it into the low 70s for radio propagation on Earth's dayside. That's wonderful because it keeps it in the marginal range, and these conditions could easily continue over the next week. Now, also because we are at the near solar minimum, we have a higher impingement of cosmic rays than we normally would have. So you frequent flyers, and this does include you air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose right now, and this does include prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is getting very exciting as we begin to taper off from the fast solar wind that's been hitting us over the past couple days and bringing us some aurora at high latitudes. You aurora photographers, keep your fingers crossed, because if that big filament launches on the Earth-facing disk, it could send us an Earth-directed solar storm, which means more aurora, maybe this time even as far south as mid-latitudes. Now, amateur radio and shortwave radio responders, well, you should be loving life because radio propagation on Earth's day side is at the marginal range. And that's thanks to two fast-growing sunspots on the Earth-facing disk. One of those sunspots looks like it might actually be a rogue sunspot showing an influence from the next solar cycle, but it's kind of hard to tell as of yet. Luckily, neither of those regions are flare active right now, but that could change. Now, as far as your GPS users are concerned, well, your reception on Earth's day side should look pretty good, and even at low latitudes on Earth's night side should also be pretty top-notch. And if that filament launches here in the next couple days, you'll at least still have some clean reception, probably through the weekend. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. You know, she's a fine Irish lass. Here we are just a few days out of St. Patrick's Day. Her maiden name is Mulligan. And as you can see, she's got the red hair. She's a fine Irish lass. And if you're not following Dr. Tamitha Scove on Twitter, you really are doing yourself a disservice. And spaceweatherwoman.com is a great website as well. This episode of Ham Nation is being brought to us by our good friends at LDG Electronics. LDG, you know the name LDG. I don't have to tell you about it. Well, maybe I do because, well, we have a commercial. LDG provides state-of-the-art automatic antenna tuners for every amateur need, from high power to low power. That's QRP to QRO or vice versa. Fixed stations, portable and remote, an LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using their lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. These are great units. You got to check out the LDG AT1000 Pro 2. That is the flagship automatic tuner. Made for QRO, that's high power hams. It'll handle 1,000 watts sideband, 500 watts FM and digital. Covers from 1.8 to 54 megahertz continuously. You can match Yagis, dipoles, inverted Vs, slopers, virtually any coax fed antenna from 6 to 1,000 ohm impedance. Tune time, under 10 seconds. Memory tuning is under 2/10 of a second. Large, easy to read bar graph watt meter with two selectable ranges. Dual antenna switch, 2,000 memories for each position. This is a fine, high-quality product. And LDG is a fine, high-quality company, a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. Their focus is on anticipating and meeting your needs and providing you with world-class support that is literally just a phone call or an email away. And all the LDG tuners carry a full 2-year warranty. It's fully transferable if you ever sell it or give it away. Your LDG tuner has the remainder of the warranty, and it goes with it. Free shipping, return shipping on all warranty repairs. LDG products, including balance and cables, they're all available for purchase through selected resellers, one of which, of course, is DX Engineering. So check out which automatic tuner is right for you. Go to LDGElectronics.com to learn more. That's LDGElectronics.com, and we thank them for their support of Ham Nation. Apparently, the squirrel that was powering Bob's internet fell off the squeaky wheel, so we're not going to have him later on for his Amico project. We'll try to get to that next week. But we've got a great video from K7AGE, and George has that on Smoke and Solder right now.
I do have that right now. And, yeah, it is a nice idea here. Well, I won't say idea. Let me just say, if you were wandering around and you found an abandoned military antenna that wasn't being used, wouldn't you hook your radio to it? Well, that's what Randy did. Let's learn more about that.
Hi, it's Randy, K7AGE. I'm out at the Titan Missile Museum, south of Tucson. And what we can do is hook up to this giant HF disc cone antenna that's out here. I have a box here. You hook the coax up to your radio. We're going to hook it up inside the motorhome. Another shot of the antenna. You can see the hat up on the top. And that wires come down to this ring. Expand out and then come back down to the bottom. And I have a conduit here with the feed line going over. Here's a sign out here for amateur radio operators. Go ahead and hook up your radio to the antenna. go into the visitor center and sign in. And this is sponsored by the Green Valley Amateur Radio Club. Inside the motorhome now, and I've got my MFJ 269 antenna analyzer. I thought I'd take a look to see what the antenna looks like. And it's 7 megs. It's about 1.7, 1.8 SWR. Up at 7.3, it's about 2.4. So the antenna tuner I have with the radio will help make the radio happy. So now I'm on 20 meters. The SWR at the low end of the band is about 2.0, 2.1. And if I go up to 14.35, thereabouts, it's about 1.6. So works better on up on 20. And just for grins, I'm up on at 15 meters, 21 megs. It's about 2.93 SWR. And at the high end of 15, it's about 2.2. So you probably need an antenna tuner to use the antenna. Go ahead.
My name is Bob Bravo, Oscar Bravo. I'm in Derby, Kansas, just south of Wichita.
Okay, we're good in Kansas, doing a good signal, and really, at 20 works pretty good with this antenna here. Again, we're operating FT857 and operating it off my BioNO battery. I got one of these 30 amp hour ones. So, KE0REM from K7AGE.
K7AGE, I hope the weather there is a whole lot warmer than it is here in Kansas. We're supposed to actually make it to 40 degrees today and up to about 50, I think, tomorrow. But it's been not cold like Minnesota and the northeast part of the state, but it's been pretty chilly down around, we've had wind chills below zero and maybe 10 below the last couple of days. So it's warming up again for our second spring this year already.
Yeah, okay, we've been watching the news with the polar vortex freezing out the north central.
That's my Wilson.
Oscar, Mike, Charlie. That's Mark, Mike, Alpha, Romeo, Kilo. Located in Muskogee, Oklahoma, in the northeastern part of Muskogee, Randall. Over.
Very good, Mark. KC0OMC from K7AGE. You must be looking at my QRZ page. The name's Randy. And operating here from the Titan Missile Museum. We pulled up the motorhome and run the coax out the window and hook up to this giant disc cone antenna. And I'm running a FT857 here. And it's, I don't know, maybe about 70 degrees and a little cloudy today.
Thanks, Randall. Hey, you're about 5'7 here in Oklahoma. So tell me more about that, Randy. Y'all travel around the motorhome or what do you got going on there?
Well, it's kind of a long trip for me here. I live in Gold Beach, Oregon, and spent 3 days to drive down to Quartzsite, Arizona. Arrived there last Friday for Quartzfest, the big 7-day ham fest out there in the desert.
Wow, Randy. Quite a trip. Well, at least you picked the right part of the country for the right time of the year. Guys got to be having some pretty decent weather down there.
He's paying attention.
A whole lot better than what we are here and the folks up in the north and northeast for sure. Randy, the band's kind of switching around on us. They're kind of up and down on me. I had a little bit of problems with that last transmission. So I'm going to say 73. Enjoy yourself out there. Take care. Be safe. K7ATE. This is Kilo Charlie 5. Oscar Mike Charlie. 73, Randy. John, good time.
IDP from K7AGE.
Yeah, fine, Randy. K7AGE, W1 IDP. Yeah, just tuning around and Randy, quite a bit, Randy. Just finished up lunch. And of course, I'm familiar with that. I'm also from Green Valley. And that's why you're hearing me so well. Sounds good. That's something I always wanted to try. Hook up to that antenna. And I bet you're having a good time with it. The band seems to be pretty good. And a little over in Continental. This is K7HEE, W1IDP.
Okay, Jerry, very good. W1IDP from
K7AGE. K7AGE, copy K2RWO once again.
Wow, you really came up.
Well,
two things happened, I think, Randy. The propagation just switched around for us, and I clipped the linear on. So you're coming in beautifully, and I hope I'm doing as good as you. Over.
He must have a bi-directional linear there if it's helping my signal. But, yeah, you just say real good signal there.
November 5, Zulu, Quebec, Kilo Mobile from K7AGE. Randy here at the Titan Missile Museum in Arizona. Go ahead.
N5ZQK/mobile. And what are you driving from K7AGE? Yeah, we're good, Rob. Yeah, it's nice. A nice little package. That's a nice a little radio. That's a...
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that it's sounding good. Yeah, it's a great little radio for mobile, that's for sure. I'm really happy with it. I just
Well, now, I like that antenna. You know, it's not every day you see a big disc cone like that, but looks like it performed really well there. Thanks for that, Randy. You know, I would do the same thing. If I knew something like that was out there and I was going to be there, I think I would have to load into it as well. That looked like a great time. You know, Randy's working on another Show Us Your Projects video. He wants some photos from you and descriptions. He wants to know what you've been building, what you've been soldering, wrenching, or drilling. Send it to Randy at hamprojects@twit.tv. That's a new address there, hamprojects@twit.tv. Let Randy know what project you've been working on. And I've been working on a couple of projects myself. The one I did most recently, and we showed this Friday night on amateurlogic.tv, I've got a little Raspberry Pi here, the Pi 3B+. I got Windows 10 running on it, the full pro version of Windows 10. And if you wonder how well that performs, well, you can go check it out, amateurlogic.tv, and see. I'll tell you right now, it's not great. But everything I tried on it worked, and that was pretty amazing. Maybe I'll come up with a good ham radio project for this. I'm not sure what it's capable of right now, but I'm planning to do some more playing with that. I'm not throwing out my Raspbian operating system, though, because that just runs too well. Let's see, what else? Well, we finally look like we might get a weekend here with some decent weather. So I've got some antenna projects that I want to work on. One is I have an antenna I want to try out that I've been holding for several months because I just couldn't get a break in the weather and be off work at the same time. But I've got the MFJ Octopus antenna. I plan on, well, hopefully this weekend I'll get to hook that thing up, tune it up, and see how it works. It's an interesting concept for an antenna. I'm surprised it hadn't been done before, but That's hopefully my weekend project this time around. Well, we're going to be back because we're going to have Amanda with the chat room here, and I know she's going to have some good questions in there tonight for Gordo because I've kind of been sneaking a peek there, and I see some good ones in there. But right now, we've got a new sponsor on the show tonight, and Don's going to tell us all about it.
We do. This is an interesting concept. We all know about push to talk. We've been using it for decades. in ham radio. Well, this episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by a company called Peak PTT. Company cell phones are not only expensive, they also can be huge time wasters for employees. You can boost your productivity and cut down costs for your company with Peak PTT. And of course, the PTT stands for Push to Talk. Peak PTT is the leading provider of push to talk systems for business communications. Interesting concept. Peak provides advanced IP-based PTT systems for small, medium, and enterprise businesses. You can leverage the internet, sell your data, and Wi-Fi networks to transmit voice over the internet. Peak PTT provides instant talk, location monitoring, and emergency alert notifications as well. Local, nationwide, and worldwide coverage. The rugged devices are made to withstand dust, dirt, water, and extreme temperatures. There's no contracts. And service billing is month to month. And here's the neat thing. Less than 1 second connection time. So you can instantly connect with hundreds of users at once or talk privately with anyone in your group. Central tracking and communication center from any PC. Real-time GPS tracking for accurate and complete visibility and SOS notifications. And the K2 PTT system is ideal for small and medium-sized businesses. This system includes an affordable walkie-talkie style handset. It's the model number is the PTT84G. iOS and Android apps, PC dispatch software for device location tracking, as well as light PC dispatch client software. And the Everest PTT system is capable of handling deployments of any size. It's a rugged IP67, IP68 dedicated PTT headset. Five nines of network availability, lower latency results and rates than some of the most significant players in the industry. PC-based dispatch console to locate devices on demand and view on a map. Easily and efficiently handle SOS events. And these are great devices, the PTT 584G, the 394G, and the 244G. And PTT calls last an average of 15 seconds versus more than 50 seconds for traditional calls. So you get all your information in faster. Get in touch faster and operate more efficiently with Peak PTT. Visit peakptt.com and use promo code TWIT at checkout to save 15%. You get 15% off with TWIT at checkout for the coupon code. That's Peak PTT, PEAKPTT.com. Use promo code TWIT for 15% off, and we thank Peak PTT for their support. Brand new sponsor here at Ham Nation. And if you think they can help your business, by all means, go and check them out. Amanda, nice to have you monitoring the chat room for us tonight.
Well, good evening. I'm also modeling a harness. Want to see it, you guys? Yes.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Kind of a silly question. Show us your harness.
Okay. Show me your harness time. I'm going to bring the mic up here. I'm going to go over a few things. And by the way, this is fitted for Jeff. That's why there's so much extra room right here. And as you can see, we've got these little leg straps here. Woo. And then down here, we also have some loops here. You stick these on the tower. And there's also another belt that there's usually wrapped around here, but it's stuck on Jeff's other belt. And you can see, sorry, I know the volume is probably horrible for that, but I thought I'd put one on for you guys. Let you see what they were talking about earlier. There. Yes, definitely. And it's really heavy. And I can understand why people want to say, oh, I'll just walk right up there. I'll just climb up there real quick, like, and make this adjustment, because these are really a pain, but they're really essential. So please get one. And Jeff had mentioned, he said, this is why a lot of repeater owners now face so many problems, because they want to put these repeaters on towers such as American Towers or Castle something or other. And they say, well, you can put your stuff up there, but you have to be a certified tower climber. So, that really takes away from it and makes it harder for hams to be able to get on all of these commercial towers. So look into it. And like Tim said, get a hold of somebody that knows what they're doing. So, okay, let's move on here. Gordo, I do have a couple of dipole questions for you. This was an interesting statement, and I didn't even think about it. K9 ID Ron says, my 40-meter dipole is stretching. Resonant point gets lower every year. I never thought about that and how you have them stretched so tight. Have you ever faced that problem?
That is a problem. As soon as you go to 16 gauge wire or 18 or 20, stuff like this, yeah, it's going to stretch. And the more it stretches, the lower in frequency. But after a while, I have found that after it gets its stretchiness out, I simply take up at the lower insulator and wrap the wire, the extra wire around itself, shorten it down. Remember, 1 inch for every 100 kilohertz, and that'll make up for the stretching. But about 20 gauge is about the smallest wire that you can put up for a dipole without it stretching. Once you get to 22 and 24 gauge, even this 20 gauge wire began to stretch on me, and I had to take up each end of the dipole. But remember, the bottom ends of a dipole can be fairly close to the ground. And as Tim mentioned, if you can, try not to stand on a ladder to be adjusting it, because you fall 3 feet and it could be curtains. So use a little larger than this kind of little tiny wire and you'll be set. No stretching.
Okay. The next question I have for you, Gordo, again about dipoles, is what is there an actual formula for figuring out the length of your dipole that you need for certain bands?
Yes, there is. 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz. And I'm going to change my lighting here. There we go. 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz. And that's going to be a half wave dipole. And just cut that answer in half for each side. But again, 10 meters start out at about 8 feet. 15 meters at about 11 feet. 20 meters at about 16 and a quarter feet. 32 feet for 40 meters and 64 feet for 75 meters. And if you have a whole bunch of real estate like you do, you could go for 160 meters. That'll be about 128, maybe 129 feet long on each side.
Very good. We tried to put up an 80 meter loop. And unfortunately, we did not have the real estate for that. We laid out all of the wire. We used electric fence wire, and it did not work out for us so well. And actually, electric fence wire can be nice to use for wire antennas, but it's coiled so tightly, everybody. When you pull it out and then you cut it, bing, it all goes crazy. So, all right. Those were the only questions I had for you, Gordo. Thank you so much. Jerry K8VGL wanted me to mention the Light Up 2 Meters night on Sunday, March 24th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Gordo, you going to play around on that?
Yes, that's our Simplex Net, and I'm going to be there. That's a Simplex contest day this coming Sunday, and I'll be on 146, 52, 55, and 58. But for single sideband on 2 meters, I'll be down at 144.200. Hawaii is not coming in yet. That's 2,500 miles simplex on 2 meters, under 100 watts. But this July, I'm pretty sure it will be. So for this coming Sunday, I'm just going to be looking around Southern California, San Diego, maybe even Arizona, and see who we can pick up both on FM 146.52. That's a good starting spot. Once you make contact, move up to 55 or 58 and have a great time talking simplex a lot further than you thought you could.
All right. Well, I hope to hear everybody's reports about that. I can't wait to see if prop is nice to everyone and everyone gets to hear anything. I do have one other question, Gordo. When you talk about all of these dipoles, what's your go-to dipole? What's the first one you want to tell people when they get on HF to throw up there?
If they have a technician class license, put up a 10-meter dipole. And that is about 8 feet per side. See where it matches up. And again, to go lower in frequency, you want to make the dipole slightly longer. But instead of stretching it, just take one little wire off the end and let it dangle down. That'll give it a nice capacitive effect to lower about 100 kilohertz for each inch. And I recommend 10 meters to get started as a technician class operator using voice 28.3 to 28.5. And for general, advanced, and extras, jump right into 20 meters during the day or 40 meters at night. Because as you know, Amanda, 40 meters at night goes coast to coast.
Absolutely. That would be my recommendation. 40-meter dipole. Get it up there. See what you can hear. See who can hear you. That was our first HF antenna and probably one of our favorites, really. George, what about you? What's your recommendation?
I use an 80-meter loop. I like it for 80 meters. It's a little bit quieter, but I use an off-center fed dipole because I don't have enough room to string up a lot of different dipoles for a lot of different bands. So the off-center fed, gives me 40 meters and some of the bands above that. I have to use a tuner with it, but it works okay. But a dipole antenna and inverted Vs, that's just another variation of the dipole there. Those are the most popular around.
They absolutely are. And Don, I think that's what you use, isn't it?
I love a wire antenna. I've got two wire antennas up, both from radio waves. I've got their DX80 and their DX160. Those are off-center fed dipoles, and they both work excellently. But you know what? My first antenna, and I might get a little grief for this, but I don't care. My first HF antenna was a G5RV. I bet a lot of us started with a G5RV. You can probably put a G5RV at least as an inverted V into most suburban lots because it's only, 102 feet long? If that's all the room you got, put that up there and you can get pretty much all the bands. I know Bob likes his single band dipole antennas, and those are great. But, for those of us who maybe don't have the space or to put all those up, grab a multiband antenna. Start with a G5RV. I moved up to an off-center fed dipole and absolutely love it. So 80-meter off-center fed dipole for me if you got the room. 40 meters if you don't. Now, of course, they sell shortened versions of 40 and 80-meter or 80 and 160s as well. So I think the shortened version of the 80-meter off-center fed is the same physical length as the full-size 40. You won't get quite the performance, but hey, anything to get it up in the air. Get it up in the air, put a little fire in the wire, and see who you can talk to. That's what it all comes down to.
Absolutely. George, did you have something else to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think everybody's first HF antenna was a G5RV. I'm not sure why, but it just seems like that's what almost everybody had for a first antenna.
You get a lot of grief sometimes for a G5RV, but it's a great antenna. I mean, yeah, it's doesn't do anything really well on any particular band, but it gets you on the air, and that's the important thing, isn't it?
It is, actually. And the funny thing is that I used to run traffic nets, worked all states nets all the time. And this one guy had such a strong signal on his G5RV, Charlie in Missouri. And I told Jeff, I said, I want that antenna because he always sounds so good. I want to try it. And Jeff eye rolled me like crazy. Mm-hmm. Guess what we still have on our tower is a G5RV. We listened to 80 meters on that because we really don't have another way to do it. And we've made several DX contacts on it. I've worked Belize and, not across the world, but I've made some good DX contacts on it when the band is open. So there's nothing wrong with the G5RV in my opinion. And even the juniors, when you have like a homeowners association or something that doesn't allow antennas, we have a friend that has the junior and he has it hanging from his top porch down to his basement and he makes contacts, especially on FT8 now. I mean, that's all you need. So
whatever gets you on.
That's right. Just throw it up and see if it works. Don't throw up. Throw it up. Okay. All right. Let's go over some nets tonight. There's not going to be a 75-meter net. There's too much QRM at W7UDI's QTH there. So sorry, everybody. But try 7192 for 40 meters and also D-Star on 14 Charlie and TAC 311 for DMR. So that's what I've got. Who's wrapping it up tonight?
Oh, it's probably me since I wasn't here last year, unless George, you want to wrestle for it, or Gordo?
Let's flip alligators for it.
Seriously, that's a thing?
It's Gordo, let's see who can feed the most marshmallows to the alligators. We'll have to prepare for that. All right, well, I'll go ahead and wrap it up since I bailed out early last week because of my cold. I'm feeling much better. I'm not 100% back, but I'm much better. I managed not to cough too much tonight. So George will be back next week, and we'll hear more from the Amico. Great information from Tim Duffy on tower safety. Tower safety is essential. We cannot stress it enough. We've lost two great hams since October. And, man, let me tell you something. I fell off the bottom step of my back deck and broke my arm. So imagine what you can do from 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, 100 feet. It's not worth it. Harness up or get a pro to do it, because your life is worth everything. So that's all I got to say about that. So for all of us here tonight, we're going to wish you a good night. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week here on Ham Nation. So good night, everybody.